Our seventh case for this morning is Margaret Seaman against Michael Astrew, Commissioner of Social Security. And we'll hear from Ms. Goldblum.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel, I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of the plaintiff, Margaret Seaman. In this case, there's no question that plaintiff Margaret Seaman met her burden of showing an inability to perform her past relevant work. In fact, the administrative law judge found that as of 6 months prior to her 55th birthday and not applying the grids mechanically as he's supposed to do, the administrative law judge found that she was disabled based on a range of light work.
So, Ms. Goldblum, can I ask you a practical question? I mean, this case, of course, is about this time span between what she alleged as her date first, you know, eligible for disability benefits, the June 2002, and October 6th. Mm-hmm. So is it really about those 4 years, or does that affect her payments going forward in the future?
It's about those 4 years.
It's about those 4 years. Okay.
Here's the thing in this case that the first thing that struck me in this case is that the vocational expert on cross-examination said that, in essence, particularly he had named jobs. And then on cross-examination, he's asked essentially about pace in terms of how what percentage of pace the individual has to be able to do to sustain the jobs. He's asked, with moderate limitation in number of areas, that the number of areas that have been checked off here, if the individual not able to keep pace, say couldn't do 80% or 75% of what's normally expected, would the individual be able to keep those jobs? The vocational expert says no. And then he's asked, well, what percentage is expected? What do you have to be able to do? And he says, I think it would be 100%.
But you see, I mean, I guess I read that, and the commissioner's brief picks up on this. I don't think the ALJ was saying that this is some very strange set of jobs that people have to perform perfectly all the time or they don't do it. There's that phrase of what it's expected, and employers realize, you know, that people are going to have good minutes and bad minutes, basically. So I'm not sure that I think she had to be 100% on every second. I'm not sure that's what he meant.
Well, here's the problem with that. First of all, the ALJ never really says that. And defendant in their brief says that, well, it appears that the vocational expert was confused. We have to keep in mind that at step five, it's the commissioner's burden to show that there's substantial evidence of other jobs that this individual can perform. Okay, so let's accept the commissioner's position that the vocational expert was confused here in terms of how much time does the individual have to be on pace. I mean, do they have to be, you know, is it 85, 90% of the time do they have to be on pace? And that was never really answered. And that's significant here, because the administrative law judge recognizes that there are at least moderate limitations on concentration, persistence, and pace. So if the vocational expert has never answered to a degree of satisfaction that the government admits, how much time they have to be on task, on pace, then the government has not met its burden of showing that there's a substantial number of jobs that the individual can perform, just looking at that alone. Now, the jobs that were left with were cafeteria attendant and brusher. Brusher, yes. Which,
I thought that was a dead profession, actually, but maybe that's just me.
Well, we don't really have any indicia of where the numbers of those jobs came from, but unfortunately we have to leave that for a different argument. But what's problematic and what has been addressed here, and I think is significant, is that the ALJ's hypothetical question said there could be only occasional overhead tasks. And the government concedes that the administrative law judge didn't meet his burden of fulfilling the requirements of Social Security ruling 004P, that says, in essence, judge, you have to ask the vocational expert, is his testimony consistent with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles? Now, the problem here is that when we look at the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, it shows us that both of these jobs require either frequent or constant reaching. The Dictionary of Occupational Titles doesn't tell us exactly how much of that is overhead reaching. But here's the thing. When we just thinking about those two jobs, if the cafeteria attendant is supposed to be taking trays and putting them back and taking cups of coffee and putting them away, it's all going to depend on, in the individual cafeteria, where the trays are kept. If trays are kept above shoulder level, then that cafeteria worker is going to be reaching above shoulder level pretty much all day. And in terms of the brusher, it wasn't...
Let me ask, who has the... I realize the ultimate burden is on the commissioner, but who has the job of teasing that out? Because I can certainly visualize plenty of cafeterias where, you know, you take something from the table and there's some conveyor belt and off the trays go, and there's no overhead reaching. So if the vocational expert is saying, bearing in mind these various physical limitations, why should we assume the vocational expert is identifying jobs that don't comply with the very restrictions the experts recognized?
Well, one of the things is that we have here an instance where the administrative law judge failed in his burden to even ask the vocational expert, has what you've described here, is it consistent with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles? Now, keep in mind the Dictionary of Occupational Titles says frequent or constant reaching. Now, if he had asked, if the administrative law judge had said, is your testimony consistent with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, the vocational expert might have said, you know what, Your Honor, it is, except for the fact that I specifically identify jobs that don't involve overhead reaching. The Dictionary of Occupational Titles, those jobs, there might be some, but, you know, that's not the case here. And then the judge has fulfilled his requirement. We have an explanation. I mean, we're not asking, you know, for a whole lot here, but we're asking that the judge does fulfill his burden, and that wasn't done. And there are other things that are problematic about the case. Let's look at credibility for a moment. There were a number of problems with what happened here. Defendant likes to say that in our briefs we argue that the administrative law judge shouldn't look at the person's activities. That's not the case. We think that the administrative law judge definitely can and should look at someone's activities, but they have to do so reasonably and accurately.
The point was that the record only showed that she did. She went on the one fishing trip somehow, and that these were very isolated incidents.
Exactly. And then the other problem with that, with the credibility finding, and this is never really recognized by the judge or only in a way that's inaccurate, he talks about exaggeration. The problem with that is this is a woman who was found to have a somatoform disorder, and the ALJ also seems to mix up the idea of hypochondriasis. It's not something she controls, and in saying that the exaggeration demeans or takes away from her credibility, he's not reasonably looking at her actual underlying mental impairments. If there are no other questions, I'll continue on rebuttal.
Okay, very good. Yes, Mr. Guerin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, James Guerin for the Commissioner. The ALJ in this case, as Ms. Goldblum pointed out, awarded benefits to Ms. Seaman, basically bent over backwards. She was found disabled based on the medical vocational guidelines, which would allow her, given her vocational profile, to be found disabled as of her 55th birthday. Unfortunately for Ms. Seaman, her 55th birthday came after her insured status expired, and so she would not have been able to have been found disabled. The ALJ exercised his discretion and basically backdated her 55th birthday 6 months so that she could be awarded benefits.
But, of course, this case is about, I mean, you know, and I recognize the ALJ did all that. This case is about that four-year period, roughly, from 2002 to 2006. And looking at the record, especially when we know that we've gotten to step five, you have, you know, what turns out to be a common problem. You know, it's this retained expert who just reads through the file, who thinks that she wasn't really disabled. You know, she's having suicidal ideation. She's doing, as far as I can tell, nothing but going to doctors for that four-year period. She's searching out and getting treatment from doctors. It's not like the doctors are dismissing her from their offices saying, you know, you're a hypochondriac, go away and don't bother me. The doctors are attempting to treat her. And the thought that this vocational expert boils things down to a cafeteria attendant and a shoe brusher, and even then may not be clear about which subset of those two jobs she might be able to do given her mental problems. I don't know. I'm concerned that the ALJ may not have fully incorporated for the VE the mental issues into those hypotheticals.
Well, Judge Wood, I agree that I think that the evidence in this case is fairly complex. The ALJ found that during that period in late 2002 and early 2003, Ms. Seaman had very severe mental impairments.
And he says, well, that was just intermittent somehow, and he carves out what's actually now just about a 2.5-year period before he finds her fully disabled.
And he found that after February 2003, the evidence showed that her condition improved. And, in fact, he pointed to affirmative evidence. Ms. Seaman has argued that he simply relied on a stabilization in her condition. But, in fact, she told doctors that her depression was better. She said that her medication, Celexa, was effective. It was controlling her depression.
To say your depression is better might mean that you're not off at the ER on a suicide watch. It doesn't necessarily mean she's reporting that she's able to work.
Well, the ALJ, it should also be noted, the ALJ did not find that after February 2003 she was cured. In fact, the ALJ made a point to say that she continued to have mental issues, and he pointed to evidence showing that. On a couple of occasions, when she went to the hospital for her physical problems, she was hyperventilating. And he took into account all of that as well. And he reached a conclusion based on the evidence before him that during that period, she clearly had established by the evidence that she had problems with concentration and that she had problems with interacting with other people.
And so why do we come up with a cafeteria attendant job if that's the case? It seems to me you're in the midst of people and it's clattery and, you know, it seems very odd.
What the ALJ found was, and this was supported by the district court, in fact the district court had remanded the case previously because the ALJ didn't include this finding, what the ALJ found was that she was limited to brief superficial interactions with other people. Now, I would submit to you that the fact that someone is working in a cafeteria among other people, certainly, doesn't mean that the interactions are anything other than brief and superficial. At most, you're pouring a cup of coffee. You're not engaged in a conversation with these people. You're not negotiating with them. You're not negotiating prices or anything like that. These positions, again, the vocational expert considered these to be consistent with a limitation to brief, superficial interaction.
This is not a woman who had a lot of education, right?
I believe that's correct, yes. And, of course, the jobs that the vocational expert found took into account her education. That was part of the ALJ's hypothetical question, was to assume someone of her age and educational background and work experience. As for the vocational expert being confused by the attorney's questioning, I'd just like to briefly address Ms. Goldblum's point. The commissioner's point in our brief was not that the vocational expert was confused about what Ms. Seaman could do. It was that the vocational expert was confused at being asked what percentage of the time is this individual expected to do what's expected of her?
Well, but, you know, I think questions like that are asked commonly. I mean, vocational experts are often asked, you know, if somebody needs to take one break an hour, is that still compatible with the job? What if it were two or three? You know, what if they can't be there one day out of 10? Yeah, I mean, it seemed to me just another way of asking that question.
They are asked questions like that, similar to that, but I haven't personally seen any instances where a vocational expert, and I concede that at one point the attorney used the word pace, but then he described it, he explained it as meaning doing what's expected of her.
That is to say, not taking a break, right?
You know, or doing exactly. I think that if a job allows for breaks, then they can take a break.
But again, he says no breaks in a way, or at least that's how Ms. Goldblum is interpreting it. That this is 100% of the time. If you're on the job, you got to be working.
But that's not what exactly the attorney at the hearing said. He said, what percentage of the time is the individual expected to do what's expected of her? And the vocational expert, we submit, very reasonably said 100% of the time. Any job you have, you're expected to do what's expected of you 100% of the time. That doesn't mean that you're expected to be focusing with unwavering attention from morning till night. As we pointed out in our brief, that might be true for air traffic controllers, but not for, yeah, we hope, but not for cafeteria attendants and lawyers.
And lawyers, did you say?
Regarding the issue of the activities and the fishing trip and the going to the fair, I would agree that those do not in themselves demonstrate that Ms. Seaman was unable to do any work. Those don't, but that's not what the ALJ used those factors.
It shouldn't really have been given any weight at all. It seems to me if you try on two isolated occasions to do something, it really doesn't tell you much about your ability to go to work every day.
But, Your Honor, look at the context in which the ALJ is referring to those two things. He's basically pointing to the fact that Ms. Seaman testified or issued other statements that she could do absolutely nothing. And he points out that this is not absolutely nothing.
But she also describes these as rather failed efforts. I mean, just because you try something and then it doesn't really work out isn't completely inconsistent. I just found that not helpful at all to the commissioner's position.
And I would also just point out that she also, the ALJ also considered issues of exaggeration, noncompliance with medications, and so on, other valid factors. And we ask the court to affirm the commissioner's decision if there are no further questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Goldblum?
Very briefly, this idea of whether the ALJ included all of the proper ingredients into his hypothetical question to the vocational expert, and we maintain that he did not. For instance, there's a reviewer for the agency, Dr. Mulberg. Dr. Mulberg reviewed the record and reported such things as at least a moderate inability to maintain regular attendance, work at a consistent pace, maintain socially appropriate behavior, all of which the VE indicated is going to preclude work. And the ALJ neither included any of those things in the assessment nor explained why he's rejecting those findings from Dr. Mulberg, which under Social Security Ruling 96-6P, he is required to do. And I would just end by saying that I think the interchange between the attorney at the hearing and the vocational expert, I think it's pretty clear he was asking about how long can they be on off task. That question's asked the VEs frequently, and depending on the VE, you generally get any range between, you know, they can only be off a tiny bit depending on the job and the supervision, or as much as, you know, 5 or 8%, something like that. This one happened to say 100%. But at any rate, the administrative law judge didn't meet his burden at step 5. I think that at this point, the court should consider remanding for an award of benefits, or at the very least, remanding so that all of these problems can be cured in front of the agency. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thanks to Mr. Guerin as well. We'll take the case under advisement.